Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of the show. We like to start out all the episodes with what we call a colleague call-out. So I got a couple of them for you today before we get to our guest. First of all, if you are an organization that has really messed up, screwed up processes, you might want to focus on that first before addressing people issues. If you're looking for help, figuring out better processes, looking at ways to alleviate waste, you need a guy that understands what he's doing. That person is my friend Paul Critchley. His company is New England Lean Consulting. Paul is an engineer that will come in and take a look at processes and be able to suggest ways to improve, eliminate waste, make things function better. Before you attack people, always look at process. To reach my friend Paul, contact him at newenglandleanconsulting.com. Now, that's a process problem. How about a people problem? How about a people problem that you personally might be experiencing? Sometimes training won't help you when it comes to being a better employee. Coaching is the answer. And if you're looking for a good coaching solution, look no further than my friend Margie Bush from Wisdom Tree Coaching. We send all of our coaching business from here at Boss Builders to Margie. Margie takes care of business. She has a methodology. She has some great assessments. Bottom line is, if you are willing to put in the hard work, you can be better, more effective, and more productive. To reach Margie and her team, contact them at wisdomtreecoaching.com. Our guest today is Ed Crow. Ed Crow is a consultant. He is an author. His latest book, Strategic HR, Driving Bottom Line Results Through Your People, is out now in print, and it is a great resource. Ed's going to talk to us today about why strategic HR. He's interesting. He's got experience on both sides of the equation, the business and the HR. I've got great questions. He's a great speaker. He's got some awesome stories. So let's quit talking about Ed. Let's talk to him. You know what to do. Buckle up that seatbelt. Make sure your personal item is tucked underneath the seat in front of you. It's time to take off.
Should the cabin lose pressure, oxygen masks will drop from the overhead area. Please place the mask over your own mouth and nose before assisting others.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the HR Oxygen Podcast, the show focused on the overworked, overwhelmed, and underappreciated HR professional. And now, here is the host of our show, the Boss Builder, Mac Monroe.
Ed Crow, welcome to the show.
Hey, great to be here, Mac. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Listen, I guess for the purpose of the audience wondering how I met you, I think I met you several years ago. It was the Pennsylvania State HR Conference.
Yes,
and
it was.
And that was, I think, about 3 years ago, 2 years ago? I can't remember.
About right, yeah.
Yeah, and then I ran into you again at the Louisiana State Conference in Baton Rouge, and I mm-hmm. was finishing up a talk, and you came in behind me, and we said hello real quick, and that was it. But I see you all the time on LinkedIn. You are an HR strategist. You are an author. You have a new book that's out. We want to talk about that book.
Okay.
But before we get into the topic today, which is why strategic HR, please tell us about yourself, Ed. Tell us your background, what your expertise is, and then we'll get into some of these questions we have.
Sure. Thank you. So before I get into consulting and helping other companies, I cut my management teeth at UPS. And, you know, I think that experience of working with not just a large company, but having had some rotations through operations has made me the HR professional that I am today. And after that, I was in a large top 40 accounting firm that was growing like mad, and had both internal HR responsibilities there as well as some external consulting work. And so I've gotten to see how two very differing organizations manage people. You've got the old blue chip UPS, been around the block, 100-year-old company and unionized, and then the professional world of accounting that was growing through acquisitions and kind of climbing the leaderboard, as it were, in terms of the number of clients served through those acquisitions. And so I think that it really rounded me out, and it impacted me as an HR person because it helped me to realize that HR is so much more than compliance and paperwork and documentation.
Well, I think when people think about HR, that's kind of what they think about. I mean, we see the whole range, right? From I am the handbook Nazi all the way down to I'm the one that plans the parties. Yeah. And at least from what I've seen, you know, no one really gets a clear expectation, especially if you are listening to this and you were the first ever HR person. Now that looks sweet on your resume, but I bet there's a whole bunch of expectations you never thought you'd be expected to do. So I don't know. It seems like it's a field that even though it's defined, Ed, it's not really clearly defined. Has that been your experience?
Yeah. It's almost, you know, that old saying, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. I feel like HR's value is in the eyes of the C-suite. And so it changes from company to company what their expectations are. And from what I've been seeing, larger companies seem to get it. They get that if they're going to differentiate themselves, especially in an economic environment that we're in now, where really candidates are in control of the process, they've got to differentiate themselves. But as you move away from that, say, Fortune 1000, and you get into those mid-size companies, you start to see that HR is that more administrative type function, and please just keep me out of hot water and just get me bodies in seats kind of mentality.
Yeah, well, that's a tough place to be because, you know, what I've seen is that you bring someone in who is, you know, you're our HR, we really need HR. And the first thing HR does is get you into the compliance that you needed to be in that you haven't been in since you started the company.
Right.
And then all of a sudden the fun's over, right? Now it's like, hey, you can't do this. Well, wait a minute. I'm the CEO. I'm the owner of the company. Who are you to tell me? Well, the answer is I'm HR. That's
right.
Why you hired me, right?
Right.
Yeah, so today, today's CEO, what do they expect? I mean, and I know this is a big question because you've worked with the largest of companies, and I'm sure you've worked with some small ones.
Absolutely.
Baseline, what's the expectation?
So let me give you two examples on that front. As I was writing the book, I was interviewing CEOs on this exact scenario. And I had one gentleman, I had actually known him. He was the head of sales at a former client of mine. And left there and actually started a competing entity. And when we were chatting, and he's grown the company nicely over the last dozen or so years, and he said, Ed, I don't have an HR person, and I don't want one. I said, but at the size you are, don't you feel like, he says, you know what, I rely on my attorney for some of that stuff, and I know it costs me more money, but here's why I don't want HR. I've seen throughout my career that all HR does is tell people what they can't do. Instead of saying, okay, within the framework of regulations or best practices, here's where I think we need to go to have maximum impact on this initiative. And he said, I got tired of hearing no. I want someone who will help me to grow my business and not tell me all the things I can't do. Kind of hard to argue with the man.
Right.
And then I was chatting with the CEO of a client who their HR person had just left. And interestingly enough, this CEO started his career in HR and then went over into sales and some ops. And so he's a really well-rounded CEO. And he said, Ed, my next director of HR is coming from outside of the HR world. I said, okay, tell me about that. And he said, you know, I've got some HR generalists in the organization and they know the basics. They can recruit and they can do the employee relations and that basic stuff. He said, but what I want out of my next director of HR is a great communicator. Being that I've got solid generalists and that I was in HR for a while, I know that any gaps in their knowledge we can fill in, but I want someone who can communicate our message, get our people to buy into that message and the vision. And he ended up bringing in someone out of a marketing function to be their director of HR.
Wow. Well, I guess that's really outside the normal standards then.
Yeah, absolutely. But I checked in with him a couple of weeks ago and he said, it's working. So, you know, when you think about it, Mac, and you've probably seen this too, is that the average HR person hasn't gone to college for HR anyway. And so, I think that there's a bit of wisdom in what this gentleman did. I would agree with him that communication is where it's at. And I've run into plenty of folks, not just in HR, but plenty of folks in management roles that struggle to communicate. And that really impacts their effectiveness.
So the 1-2 punch of success is, number one, the ability to communicate well. And I guess from what you said, to be able to not always say no, but how would we say this? Yes, but, right? Or what do they say? Now? Yes, and?
Yes, and.
There you go. Oh my God, puts you in a tough place to be. You know, just from what you've seen, what is the benefit for somebody who wants to be on this path right out of college? I mean, would you recommend they get a degree in HR? Would you recommend they go on and get a master's in business? What would you see as the best path?
I think either. It's my one regret that early in my career, when I went for my master's, that I didn't get an MBA. And certainly, I guess I could convert it at some point. But, in following that idea of being well-rounded, if you're coming out with an HR degree, I'd almost say, gosh, make sure you get some really solid business classes, even if you don't want to take that MBA. If you're coming out with a well-rounded business degree, sure, you could probably take some SHRM classes and get up to speed on HR compliancy kind of stuff pretty quickly.
Right.
So, yeah, I think for someone who's starting out, what disturbs me is, on the flip side of that, I was at an HR mixer a little while back, and we were getting to know some of the new folks to the profession that were there. And as I'm chatting with this one young lady, she said, "Yeah, I'm new to HR." And I said, "Well, you know, where did you come from?" She said, "I'm coming out of social work." I said, "Oh, well, that's an interesting transition." And she said, "Yeah, you know, HR has always intrigued me. And I decided I was going to get into HR and prove that not every HR person is mean." I thought, well, not a career goal that I guess I would strive for, but okay. And I walked away thinking, okay, I get it, but where's the business acumen you're bringing in to the HR function? That worries me. And so, gosh, I wish more HR people would take pure business classes to understand how business works.
Yeah, everything that I see in my travels really speaks to that. I talked to the GM of a plant as a manufacturer. They're up in New Jersey, and the HR director, his name is Pete. I won't say more than that. I think he's a VP now. But the GM told me, he said, "Pete is the best guy I have ever seen in HR, but Pete's background is in business and operations." Mm-hmm. And he just later decided, "I'm going to focus on this." So if you don't fit that model and you listen to this podcast, you don't go and resign today and say, "Well, I don't have any business, so I'm going to just quit." But I think, so we know then, Ed, we could get a degree in business and then go to HR classes. What would you suggest then for the HR professional who's got the degree in HR and doesn't have a lot of experience in business? Is there a path you would see them going to bring up the other half of that equation?
Yeah. Aside from formal classroom training, make sure you've always got a business book that you're reading. Expand your business horizons. And I do the same thing. I love to read, and obviously I like to read fiction, but I always have some books going. Right now I'm reading Key Person of Influence. One of the authors is Kevin Harrington, who was one of the original Sharks. And it's intriguing. I read a lot of John Maxwell on leadership and the various facets that leadership can take in your life and in your organization. And I think that's probably where the average HR person has the most chance for improvement is in developing their personal leadership skills and their influence inside their organization. And so some of that would come from, can I read a spreadsheet and a P&L? But I think just how, as a profession, we carry ourselves is critical to change as well. That we shouldn't be knocking on that executive suite door saying, let me in. I mean, they should be opening the door saying, get in here. We're not making a decision without you. But that's not going to come until we can talk the talk of the C-suite, which isn't all about, well, what's our turnover percentage and how many open positions do we have?
Wow. Well, if you're going to make this a career, this is like anything else. The harder you work at it, the better you become, the more valuable you become, the better job security and more money you make. I mean, that's a good formula right there. Mm-hmm. Well, so Ed, you're a reader, but you are also a writer. So tell us about the book, because this is brand new, right?
Brand new. Just came off the press 2 weeks ago. It's been a year in the making. And I got to thinking that, you know, like you, Mac, I have blogs out there and articles I've written, and folks tend to tell me that they enjoy the insights that I share. And I thought, well, I feel like there's so much more, and there's only so much you can cover in a short blog post or article. And so about last year at this time, I went down this road of pulling my thoughts together in more detail in a book. And what I didn't want it to be was another book on how to manage your HR function or how to set up an HR function. There are plenty of books out there on that. What I wanted to tackle was this idea of how and why HR must become strategic. They have to be a player just like every other business function that they're contributing to bottom line results. And so that's actually how I ended up with the title of the book. It's Strategic HR, Driving Bottom Line Results Through Your People. And I like to think of it as a roadmap for executives to say, okay, how do I take what I've got now, whether that is no HR function to speak of, or whether that's an HR function that is doing the basics, and how do I get them to the next level? And so that's the journey that we go through in the book. Early comments are coming in. I just had lunch with a gentleman yesterday who has finished it already. Wow. And said Ed loved every page of it. He loves the fact that throughout the book, I've got some QR codes that folks can hold their phone up to, and up will pop, you know, me talking further about that topic. He thought that was so cool that was in there. And so it's been a lot of fun, quite honestly. And I'm looking forward mostly to getting more feedback like that these business executives are saying, gosh, I've been missing this from my HR, and now I know I should expect more from them.
Wow. So this book is really, the audience are the executives, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And certainly a lot of the sales that I see coming through are HR people. And I'm very thankful for that, because they can certainly read this and learn from it and work from inside their own department to make it strategic. But yeah, I mean, I think, in fact, one of the reviews, early reviews that I had on the manuscript, a gentleman said, you know, this book's a must read for any sophisticated HR person and the executives who manage them.
Well, that's great. Well, that's a broad audience, but I tell you what, get those two on the same page, things get really good, don't they?
Absolutely. And what saddens me is I feel sometimes that there is an expectation within the HR function that we should be viewed as important by the C-suite, rather than making ourselves important to the C-suite. And obviously, those are two very different angles. And if we can make ourselves important to them, then we will be important. And so I guess I'm a bit of a rebel within the HR profession, that I look at us and I can see our profession, warts and all, and the things that we need to change to become the strategic player that business today need HR to be.
Well, it seems like every conference that I go to, people have those breakout sessions, how to get a seat at the table. And yet, you know, when I'm waiting to go on and do my talk or just kind of making the rounds in the afternoon, most of the time it's HR folks that are commiserating about the fact they don't have a seat, there with their community. And so that's their, you know, that's their safe spot to vent and complain about things. But you're saying a proactive approach is going to get them that seat rather than just hope and pray you get one, right?
Right. And Mac, my experiences mirror yours. You and I run in the same circles, and I see it as well, that these folks, they want to be accepted and they want to be part of that leadership team. And yet when I talk to them, especially if I can get them one-on-one, I try to help them see, well, if you're not there, it's because there is some lack of perception of value. And the only way you can overcome that is if you're willing to take an honest look at how you present yourself when you're in these meetings. And I was one of the clients I was working with late last year. I was brought in by the CEO, and he said, Ed, my HR function doesn't do anything for me. I got 8 people up there and I don't know what they're doing. And so I sat down and, you know, it became a really nice process, but I recall one discussion with the HR director, and she said, Ed, I get invited to all the board meetings and the C-suite meetings and the owners. Yeah, I get invited to all that and I give my presentation and out I go. I said, well, okay, so giving a presentation and being in the meeting are two very different things. And she said, well, they don't even give a rip what I have to say. I said, well, you know, give me an example. Tell me what an average monthly meeting looks like. She goes, oh, well, I prepare the statistics and I walk in and I'll tell them how many open positions we have and what we're doing to recruit and what our turnover's been. And I mockingly sat there with her and closed my eyes and nodded my head like I was falling asleep. She looks at me, she says, what? I said, don't you see the problem? Owners don't care about any of that. You need to talk to them in terms they care about, which is the impact on the business. Don't tell me I've got 5% turnover. As an owner, I don't know what that means. Am I losing good people? Am I losing bad people? Is it people at a certain level, a certain department? I don't know. You're not telling me any of that. Tell me what it's costing me. Tell me I'm losing, you know, gosh, we got to care because the top 5% that just left, they were some of our best performers and longest term employees. Now all of a sudden you've got my attention. Don't tell me how many open positions I have. Tell me what it's costing me and what we need to do to get those positions filled. Is it that we're not paying enough? Our benefits aren't competitive. Our work environment needs help. What is it? Those are the kinds of discussions that HR has to have with management. And once they say, it's a simple switch, Mac. That's what I think. Back to our opening comments about communication. Gosh, if you can flip that switch and learn to communicate with these C-suite folks in the way that they want to hear, you'll be in that meeting and be first on the agenda every single time.
Yeah, it's a great place to be. Well, you know, if you're listening to this podcast today, you're probably saying, I've heard this before. I know I should do it. But let's think about it. You get your ass kicked by somebody. You have a choice. You can run and never fight again. Or you say, wow, that hurt. I'm going to go and I'm going to train and I'm going to get ready and I'm going to come back and I'm going to attack this thing. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think Ed and I are really trying to stress here is don't give up. This happens. This is part of life, not having that influence. Ed's got the formula to get you there. He's got the training program to get you there. And it sounds like it's all about treating this thing like it's a business, maybe even your own business, mm-hmm. which if it's your own business, you're going to be really looking at those specific questions, right?
Absolutely. You know, when I say we as a profession, and that comes back to our comments on being a well-rounded HR professional, we have to know what buttons we are pushing at what points in time are having what impacts on the business. And if we can't do that, we're going to struggle. I've been in discussions with a company the last 2 weeks on a project, and it's a steel fabrication, you know, very rough and tumble, blue collar welder kind of environment, right? Their HR person refuses, and I'm not exaggerating, refuses to go out on the shop floor to talk to people, will not go out to job sites to talk to people. She catches them in the break room on their lunch break to talk to them about various things. She calls them at home in the evenings to talk to them. The people can't stand her. And we're wondering why. Why does HR have the reputation it has?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I look at that and this is going to sound harsh to the listeners, but I look at that and say that person has no business being in our profession. None.
Wow. Yeah, that's harsh. It's harsh. But again, why are we doing this, Ed? We're not doing it to beat you down. This is the formula for getting that respect, right?
Right. You know, how can you recruit a welder if you're not willing to walk out on the floor and see what a welder goes through every day? How can you recruit a truck driver if you're not willing to hop on the truck and see what a day in the life of a truck driver is like? I mean, those are all things that I did early on in my career. And I didn't think twice about it. It wasn't something I planned out. I just thought, well, I want to see what this guy or gal does all day. You know, maybe it'll help me out. And so I did it. And they weren't necessarily fun days, you know, because I'm thinking about all the other things that could be done. You know, those were the days before smartphones. So you came back to a plethora of voicemails and paper messages. But those days not only helped me then to be a better HR person, but again, I think it's made me who I am today, which is a more well-rounded just business person and understanding, okay, what buttons need to be pushed in an organization to make things happen? And I really wish more HR folks would adopt that mentality. I used to take it so far as if I was hiring for third shift, we interviewed at 2 a.m. Now, I don't want to be up at 2 a.m. I don't think there's too many people that do, much less being at work at 2 a.m. But why would I interview a third shift person at noontime? Never made any sense to me. I want to see if they can be coherent in an interview when they'd be working and when I need them coherent. And when I talk to HR folks, they kind of look at me like, you've lost your mind. I would never do that. Well, here we are.
Yeah, well, not easy. Well, if we're going to change this then, so the plan is HR's got to be more strategic. So should an HR professional or a team build a strategic plan for their department? And what would that look like?
Short answer, absolutely. and it can take a lot of different forms. You have the old SWOT analysis that are such a part of strategic plans, and that's okay. But when I look at strategic planning for HR, I like to look at it in a number of different ways. And that's, first off, what's going on in your environment, the environment of your organization, but also the environment of the outside world. You know, we know we've got ultra low unemployment and everything. That's an environmental factor that's impacting us in HR. We know healthcare costs are going up. That's driving our benefits. We have to understand all of those things and then work that into our plan of, okay, how are we going to manage through this scenario? I had an organization that, because of the rising healthcare costs, every year for 4 straight years, they changed benefit providers as a way to manage costs. So on one hand, they were able to tell people, hey, you're only getting like a $10 increase each month this year, that we kept this down. Okay, the people were appreciative of that. But they were still revolting over, wait a minute, now my doc's not in the network. They were in the network last year. Oh, last year, this prescription wasn't covered. Now it is. Oh, now next year, it's not again. The mass chaos they created, not to mention the work that went into changing those plans every year, was a time suck and didn't have the resultant impact. And again, it was being too short-sighted and looking only at the cost and saying, what's the impact to the greater organization with that one simple decision? So we need to understand those things. We need to look at what our employment brand is in the marketplace. And a lot of folks don't know that term. And if you don't, simply look at it this way. Your company has a marketing brand that says who you are and what you're about. And that's what will drive customers to you. Your employment brand is a semi-mirror image of that, but it's who you are and what you're about from an employee standpoint. And getting that message right is what's going to draw candidates to you. And so a lot of HR folks don't have any idea what their employment brand is, what their message is in the marketplace that, that they're going out with. That's got to be a part of your strategic plan, is getting that developed. And the more that I've worked on that concept, the more I've come to believe that it's the one most critical thing that's missing in most HR functions is not focusing on their employment brand.
Well, you know, companies spend, I don't know how many dollars on branding experts. Mm-hmm. That's the intent, though, is that the branding is done to draw people toward you. Right now, you may be in a position where as HR, your brand is don't come near me, or here's the one I see all the time. There's HR and the door's shut, right? And there's a little white, there's a little thing hanging there where you could write your message on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the brand you're giving off. This is the barrier. You can't come in. We'll get around to you. So it's really switching everything up, isn't it?
Yeah. And honestly, if your employment brand isn't supporting your marketing brand, sooner or later, the marketing brand's going to suffer.
It doesn't help when you have things like Glassdoor, when people end up leaving, you know, right. It isn't the people that had a great experience that want to write a review on it, are they?
Exactly. It's out there now. And I mean, I worked with a medical practice and these guys, they were specialists. And if you had the problem that they solved, you went to them. They're that good in our region. And yet the employment brand of that organization was in the toilet. It was so bad that employees would not refer their friends to come work there. Now, they would tell those very same friends, come get treated by our docs because they're the best. They wouldn't refer their friends to come work with them. Wow. That is a a big, ugly black hole of death coming fast at them as a company if they don't figure that out. And we've got them on the path. But, you know, there were things going on there like, I turned your name in, Mac, as a referral. HR never once called you. So you ended up going somewhere else. They had a situation. I talked to an employee. She said, yeah, I've been here for 6 months. And about 2 months ago, HR called me and see if I wanted to come in for an interview. Like for promotion. Oh, no. They had pulled my resume out and asked me if I wanted to come interview for an opening.
Wow.
And again, I was trying to be clear. She's like, no, Ed, they didn't even know I worked here. I mean, I was hoping that maybe there was just kind of a mistake somewhere. How does that happen? Those are little things. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. And Mac, I know you see it too. If you can't get the little things right, forget being a strategic player in your company.
Yeah. And I know this is really harsh for some folks right now because they're in the middle of this right now. But I guess if you care about your career and you care about your success, then look at your department. That's a reflection of you. And Wow, I mean, I can understand how that happens. You get busy with stuff and, you know, everything is tracked electronically now. So things pop up, but how embarrassing, right? How embarrassing to say, yeah, I know I've been working here 6 months. You didn't even know that, did you?
Exactly. You've been cutting me a paycheck. And I had this one was a personal one to me. When I was at the accounting firm, one of the things that happened is on your birthday, you got a little card in the mail with a gift card in it. You know, nice little thing. Now, those that know me well know that my first name, Ed is my middle name. My first name is Michael. So, of course, all legal documents have Michael on. So now, mind you, I'm in the HR function. I get my little card at my birthday addressed to Michael Crow. Mm. I'm like, really? So I got on the phone to the lady in HR. She was in another facility that was handling this. I said, hey, thanks for the card. Oh, thanks, Ed. It was so great. I said, what's my name? She goes, well, Ed. And I said, why did my card say Michael? And she got quiet. And I know why, right? She pulled it down off the employee report and she's just going through it. And I said, this cannot happen. It's insulting to our people. I get it. I get what you're doing. I get what happened. It can't happen, though. If we can't get our people's names right, at least the name that they prefer to be called, we're really lost.
Yeah. Well, Michael, let me run another scenario by you then. All right. So I can remember, this is years and years ago, I was working as the management education specialist at a large hospital in Maryland. And so it was an HR department of about 15. It was pretty big. Mm-hmm. But the head of this, and I'm not going to use names because she probably still runs in these circles. I'll just give her nickname, and that was Cruella.
Ah.
She was the face of HR, and it was an ugly face. And it was a absolute zero respect for that department. And yet there was a few folks in that department that did not want to accept that. And I think there was maybe two or three of us that just sort of wanted to be like the HR that everybody really wanted, the ones that would actually listen, and it was not an automatic no. And boy, that was a real, real tough situation. And eventually I did the easy way out and I quit. But if you're listening to this today and you are saying, I want to be strategic, I want us to be the department that says yes, and I want to be the great communicator, but I have a horrible VP who is determined that we will be that adversary. What's your advice for someone? Do you want them to go to the dark side, or is there another way?
Never go to the dark side. I'm a believer that we control our own destiny. And so you've got to play by the rules of the game in your organization, but you have to know those rules. And then you have to decide how you are going to implement those rules. So to your example there, I would look at that, and I've been in similar situations, and I think that's a situation a lot of folks can identify with. And I know for me, I just made a choice that, okay, that's how that person is going to run things, but I'm going to be something different in how I manage and how I control my area of responsibility and the people with whom I'm going to interact. And so sooner or later, people will go around that person. And what we hope is that if we can be their go-to, then we can make the difference in the organization that we're trying to make. And so for me, maybe it takes a little bit of a stiff spine, but people have said to me, oh, but that'd be career suicide. And I look at them and it saddens me because I think, okay, you're willing to sell your soul out for something you don't believe in. I mean, maybe finding your next opportunity is the better scenario, but stay true to yourself and be the person that you want to be for your people, because that's where respect is going to come from.
Yeah. And that's something that is so hard to get, but once you lose it, I don't think you ever get it back. So yeah, it's a tough decision, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, people will give you the benefit of the doubt on the respect thing, for a couple of weeks, couple of months when they first start to interact with you. But you're right. You burn someone, it's hard to get it back. And, if you do, that's amazing. That you better treat that person like gold because they gave you that second chance. But yeah, you can't get a lot done without respect and trust in the workplace. And while respect is earned, trust is given, and they do go hand in hand a little bit. But people have to see you for who you are and that you can help them and want to help them. And then that's where the trust comes. And shortly after that will come respect when you deliver on that.
Yeah. Well, on the subject of helping, so Ed, you are an HR strategist. How can you help our audience, and how can they reach out to you for speaking, consulting? Where do we get the book? How do we engage with Ed Michael Crow?
My website is real simple. I've got the best website in the world. It's simply edcrow.com. That's edkrow.com. That is the only place right now where you can find my book. I am resisting the dark side of going to Amazon for now. But it's the only place you can get the book. It is a secure transaction, which is great. And you've got choice between hard and soft cover out there. There is also a page to inquire about having me speak at your next event, whether that's an in-house corporate situation or a trade association conference type thing. I've got a nice little speaker kit out there, and you can see my highlight reel as well. So I've tried to make my website sort of a one-stop shop for folks that are looking to interact with me. And certainly I'm out there on Twitter and LinkedIn and all those typical social media places. I've got a YouTube channel as well. So if someone wants to find me, they can find me pretty easy, I think.
Good. Yeah. Well, definitely check out Ed Crowe. That's edkrow.com. And he's in your corner. And this is a lonely business that you're in. I've been there. Ed's been there. You need folks who can be your encouragement, who can be your technical experts, who can pick you up when you fall. And definitely Ed is that guy. So please look him up. Please engage with him. Ed, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be on the show with us. And I look forward to hopefully seeing you at another conference in the near future. And if you are going to them, please post it on LinkedIn so the audience can hopefully see you in person as well.
Oh, absolutely. And I certainly appreciate you having me on, Mac. I mean, the time always flies when you and I have a chance to chat, and I'm appreciative of you taking some time to have me on your show.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the HR Oxygen Podcast. We hope you found something today that will relieve your stress, feed your soul, and pump you up to face another day. At Boss Builders, we want to let you know that we appreciate the hard work you do every day as an HR professional. And as a reminder, always make sure to adjust your own oxygen mask before attempting to help those around you. Be well.